Welcome to Creative Disturbance. Audio Labs.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Ruth Jarman. Ruth, with Joe Gerard, you are the team of Semiconductor. You are part of a FIT project, which is a European-funded, co-funded program within which artists are in residence within FIT project. So FIT projects are future emerging technology research consortia, and FIT is future emerging art and technology program. So the goal is to explore unconventional ways of thinking and of creativity. So first of all, maybe could you explain your creative process and the kind of work you have been doing?
As Semiconductor, we mostly make moving image works, and we can work with many different methods. Some of that is digital animation, we can work with data, scientific data, we can work with real world imagery. And through these works, we're interested in exploring the material nature of our physical world and how we experience that through the lenses of science and technology. So we're interested in the signature that man imposes on nature and that he brings to nature through observing it with science and technology processes. And for us, we use these devices, we use these signatures as a way to question how much of nature we experience is mediated through science. You know, are we experiencing nature or are we experiencing science?
As far as I know, you focus more on physics as science rather than biology, for instance. And biology is also a way to experience nature. So why this choice of physics and complex and deep physics?
Well, our interest started very early on. We were very interested in landscape and sound. And the first piece of work that we worked with a scientist on was called All the Time in the World. And we were artists in residence in this amazing landscape in Northumbria in the UK. And we were thinking about all the seismic forces that had gone into making that landscape. And we tried to access seismic data so that we could then reintroduce that into the landscape through photographs we had taken to kind of bring the landscape back to life. And we're interested in these elemental forces, which are basically physics phenomena. We're interested in extending our perception of these. And so naturally, we've turned to physics as the area of science that we're interested in.
With this FIT project, so can you explain which FIT consortia you picked up and what you're doing and why you picked them up?
We're working with a team that are called QPROX, which is Quantum Probing for Complex Systems. And we were very interested in working with quantum physics. It's something that we've recently started exploring through a residency we did in CERN a year ago, the particle physics laboratory. And you know, it's a very involved subject. It's very complex. We don't go in something to try and understand it, but to try and get an essence of it through the scientists and spending time with the scientists. But it's taken us about a year to really feel comfortable exploring it as a subject matter. And so we wanted to continue that relationship by working within quantum physics. But the QPROX team are working quite differently in that they're creating quantum systems. So they're both theoretical physicists and experimentalists, and they're working together to develop experiments which control clouds of atoms, and then as a result they can individually control individual atoms. You know, this for them has many different potential uses. It can become a system where you observe it regarding to its own phenomena, or you can use it as a kind of emulator and introduce physics to it that perhaps you don't understand so well. So we're interested in the techniques they're using to develop this as a system. We're also interested in the theoretical physics, the formulations that they've developed to get to this point of being able to create a quantum system. So, and essentially we're interested in the languages that they've built up to be able to do this. So the language of theoretical physics, the formulations, what these really mean, what the signatures are, the human signatures are in these elements, the products that they produce, what are the signatures in those? So at the moment we're doing a lot of investigations around the products of the science and the processes and the techniques, and looking for man's signature in nature and looking at ways to explore those.
Future, emerging art, and technology.
Can you be more specific when you talk about the products and man's signature? Because it's a bit strange to a layperson.
So, for example, in many of our previous works, we've welcomed the anomalies and the noise that appears in the process. So, for example, in a piece of our work called Brilliant Noise, where we worked with solar physicists to access archives of actual images of the sun. In these images, you can see attributes of the technology. So you can see noise in the image that's created by the cosmic rays that land on the CCD, which appears as just lots of little specks of white noise. You see blowouts, which are where pixels can't handle the amount of light that's coming in. But what ordinarily gets released to the general public are very clean images. So those images are cleaned and processed and normally presented as these colourful images. So it's very far removed from the original, the raw data, as we call it. So the original image as it was taken, it's cleaned up. This is what we tend to do as humans, you know, with computers as well. They're designed to clean things up and present everything in an orderly fashion. Whereas in fact, as humans, we live in a very chaotic environment and then we extract information from that. So we're interested in these artifacts, this noise in the machine, and we're interested in enabling people to question science, question how it's presenting nature to us, but we're also using and employing those as a device to remind people that man is an observer of the physical world. Quite a lot of the time, all of this noise is removed for scientific purposes, so the scientists can actually focus on the particular bit of information they want, or a particular colour is used to colour an image so that that's a visual language that's shared between scientists so they would understand. So it's not necessarily just about releasing pretty images to the public, but as soon as you start to go back to the raw data, it enables people to have more of an experience of that. There's something about the noise in the image or the noise in the sound extracting the signal that we as humans can experience more directly. So it's taking away this kind of division that exists between people thinking automatically that they can't understand science, they can't engage with science, to actually feeling like, oh, okay, it's like that. It's quite similar to this thing that we already experience. So it's kind of, we call what we do, we try to create experiences of nature that are beyond our limited perceptions.
So would you say then that the scientific outputs are somehow more on the cognitive and theoretical and abstract side, and what you propose is more on a quote-unquote phenomenological experience of the same data?
We try in our work to keep as true to nature as possible. So we try to stick with the as much raw information as possible, but we're also adopting the language of science so that we're questioning science as much as creating an experience of nature. So it's a combination of the two, and you end up with a kind of hybrid. So it can become an experience where you don't need to even know what the science is or what it is that you're watching. It can be an experience in its own right. We call it a technological sublime. But underneath, there are these other elements where we're questioning science or letting people know that they can question science, because so many people feel that science is presented as a truth, where science is so much about them asking questions rather than presenting an ideal. And I think people find that quite encouraging.
Within the FIT project, which started not so long ago, so you are at the very beginning of a process, can you explain where you stand, what you have already done, and what your expectations are?
So the QPROX team that we're working with, there's about 5 or 6 members within the group. And we've visited 2 of those labs already. One of them is the Clarendon lab, which is a quantum physics and optics lab at Oxford University in the UK. And then we've also visited Strathclyde University and the quantum optical and computational group. And we've spent a whole day in those environments, meeting different scientists, being introduced to the experiments, being completely overloaded with information. And what I enjoy about these experiences is that we get thrown in the deep end. So we try not to learn about what they're doing through reading or researching beforehand. So we dive in the deep end, we learn about it directly from the scientists. And by doing it that way, we're immediately engaging with the language that they use to describe their work. Then we try to get them to talk to us about how they would talk to each other. So we're really picking up on the way they develop their language. So this is what we've been doing over the past couple of months, is following up the information that they've been giving us. We've had about 7 or 8 different strands that we're researching. One of them we're quite interested in developing further is thinking about how we might be able to develop our own kind of quantum simulation, so simulating an idea of a quantum world. This sounds like a very big, complicated task, but we're not going to try and make actual quantum calculations because it would be nigh on impossible. You know, we're interested in looking at the theoretical formulations. So these formulations that have been developed over the last 100 years in quantum physics, which individually they describe very singular parts of a quantum system, so it could describe the topology or the dynamics, and we're interested in the essence of these, what characterizes these formulations, and we're thinking about combining that with visual techniques that they use in computer simulations and where they produce actual data of quantum systems and then plot this information. So we're looking at combining different areas and different languages of quantum physics and creating these potential three-dimensional objects or animated objects. But there's still lots of other ideas on the table at the moment. And that's what's so exciting about this project, is that there's lots of potential for many more projects to come out of it.
About this encounter between yourself as an artist and the scientist, there is a whole range of format in art science creation and art science project. Why did you choose to work in collaboration with them in labs? And why did you choose this route?
Yeah, we've done a lot of residencies in science labs, and it's such a different experience from just researching their work remotely, because when they're presenting their work on a paper, it's a very idealized version of the work they're doing. They tend not to talk about the problems that are happening that there's this there's interesting relationships and ways of discussing things that you don't get to hear about. You're not involved in the process of development so much. And when you're embedded in a lab like that, you're really living that environment day to day, and you get to pick up on things that you just wouldn't be able to if you were trying to study things remotely. Also, there's the benefit that you can be thinking and developing ideas, and then you always have scientists on your doorstep or who are accessible and open to be spoken to about their work if you want to follow up ideas and talk about things in more detail. It takes quite a long time to build up a relationship with a scientist. They need to start to trust you in some way, and if they're seeing you regularly or having feedback from you, having discussions with you, they also start to understand you a bit more. So there's this two-way relationship going on when you spend time in a lab. And quite often it will take us right to the end of a residency before we feel like we're really starting to get somewhere with people. With our CERN residency, we were there for 3 months, and it was just the day before we left that somebody said that it would be fine for us to work with this particular set of data, and it had taken us that whole time to actually achieve that.
This is interesting because it leads me to the question of the format of a residency. The FET project, that is a research project, are over 3 or 4 years, and the FEED project, that is the art in residence, is over a year. What is your reaction and what is your thinking about this model and compared to other residency that you have been doing? How can you reflect on the different model of residencies?
I think the residencies that we've done previously working with science labs have been much bigger institutions than, say, the partner that we're working with at FET. So, for example, we've been in a space science laboratory where there's hundreds of scientists working, and we have access to all of them. Now, that takes us the whole 6 months that we spent there to kind of really figure out what's going on. There's so many different projects happening. But with the FET project, it's already very focused. So we're working with a much smaller team. And so actually having the type of residency where you dip in and out of meeting those scientists works perfectly in that environment, because we're spending a very intensive day or two with those scientists, whereas we might, if we were on a longer term residency over 6 months where we're actually embedded in the lab, we might see those scientists for like 15 minutes here and there, kind of to catch up with them or interview them, talk about things. So it's, you know, it's structured slightly differently, but there isn't the decision making process about what we're working on has kind of already been made, and we're researching within that. The emerging technology part is quite interesting, because certainly for the project we're working on, it's something that's in such early stages. I don't know if they will achieve, or how much they will achieve over even their 4 year period, because it's quite a big ask what they're trying to do. So they might make a very small step in that. So in terms of engaging as an artist with that aspect of it, even if it was artists embedded for 4 years in that project, I don't know how much development we would really see in that part of the project.
Through your past experience, so not FEED, because again, FEED is a starting project, but through your previous experience, do you have example of the fact that you impacted the scientist or not?
Every residency that we have done, we have impacted the scientist in some way. There's been a journey that we've gone on during the residency with the scientists, and then later producing work, it kind of feeds back and they get to see the whole journey, I guess. This kind of, it comes around a whole circle. An example I can give is when we were at the Space Sciences Laboratory 10 years ago, and we made several pieces of work. One piece of work we made while we were there called Brilliant Noise, which we made using solar archive images. And it was the group of scientists that we were working with were looking at the relationship between the sun and the earth. And so quite often they would be accessing these archives to look at images of the sun. But they would look at very specific singular images of an event happening, or a very small sequence, and they would study that over a very long period of time. And so at the end of our residency, we gave a presentation, you know, and we thought, oh, we're really taking coals to Newcastle here. It's a saying we have in the UK where that's where coal comes from, you know. So we felt like we were taking these images, and it's just like, oh, what are they going to get from it? But we had this most amazing response at that point. And I think it was a combination of them actually enjoying the work, seeing the sun, all these moments brought together, but also the fact that we were celebrating what they did. And then it was until about 5 years later that we went back, and since then we'd made other work. We'd made a piece of work called Magnetic Movie, and it had kind of gone global. It'd been posted on the internet and gone viral on there, and there'd been lots of exhibitions in high-profile museums and things in the US, especially where we'd made the work and done the residency. And lots of the scientists had seen the work, and when we walked back into the Space Sciences Lab, we were so welcome. It was such a difference, because before there'd been, you know, an undercurrent of suspicion about what we were going to do, because we didn't really know exactly what the outcome would be. I think they saw firsthand what having artwork associated with the science you do can do for their science, because they had so many people contacting them, even people from other science labs, and so it had a wide-reaching effect.
How do you see your creation, the creation you're doing in general, fitting into the art world? Where do you see yourself within the art world?
Well, we see ourselves as fine artists. I guess the more important question is, how do other people see us? Because they're the people that make the decisions about where our work gets shown. And from the very early on in our work, where we were producing experimental animations that were thinking very much about matter and digital technologies, we found that there wasn't really a platform for where we could show those works, especially in the UK. The UK was much further behind Europe and America in thinking about how the digital could exist within the frame of the art world. And so that's where we found our networks. We're in Europe, and we went to media festivals and film festivals. So as a result of the technology that we've used and trying to push new ways of working with those things, we've always found ourselves as being the other. So at an animation festival, we'll be the experimental animators. Within a sound festival, we'll be doing, you know, image and sound. Within many other different formats, we've been on the fringe. But it's been, you know, 20 years since we've been making our work now, and we were trying to shake off this digital moniker for a long time, because we felt we should just be called artists. We didn't want to have to be digital artists or sci artists, or, you know, I think that those categorizations are wrong. It should be that you're an artist and that you're inclusive. So we tend these days to show our work much more in museums and art galleries and spaces where we don't have to be defined by the tools we're using or the fact that we're working with science, you know. And I don't know whether that's a result of us because we've been making work for 20 years or because those barriers have been started to break down. You know, it always takes a long time for any new field of art to be accepted within the mainstream. And we thought that was probably happening about 10 years ago, but it took another 10 years for it probably to happen, really. And it's still going on, you know. I think it will always be like that. There'll always be these discussions around those things. But where we are now, we can happily say we're artists.
Des pastilles et un à sucer pour l'oreille, Candy.